This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 5th of March, 1972. The title of this lecture is Revision of the Product Org Officer System, Part 2. This tape is 87 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
You've got to know personnel. If this was what broke the prod org system, mishandling of personnel, failure to take them on in quantity, failure to have them and train them up, failure to let the failures out through qual. If this was what broke the prod org system and brought the orgs up, that system is a tremendous shot. But it breaks. And it breaks on the subject of establishment. And the establishment breaks on the subject of personnel. And in desperation, they use the wrong personnel pools. And so, therefore, you can expect the ESTO system to break similarly unless you correct that error. Now, built into the ESTO system is the correction of that error, or I wouldn't be talking to you about personnel right now. One of the main things is there just wasn't enough guys there establishing. It took more people, that is all. If we're going to run this kind of an expanding perimeter, there's just got to be more people there adding faster and handling faster than has ever been done before. The fastest HCO in the world would be a slow turtle compared to what an establishment officer of today would have to be to keep an expanding action going. Otherwise than that, the product org system is gorgeous. And it's still with us. Only I fixed it up now so it'll gun an organization even harder. And I expect Fiesto to catch it. To catch the ball. To keep the disintegration from occurring because there has been expansion. And do you know that this is the why of the disintegration of the first foundations of 1950? They expanded so rapidly they disintegrated. They couldn't be patrolled and policed and handled fast enough. That is the basic operational why. This drove their executives criminal upside down and backwards. I didn't control those first organizations. The board of directors of those organizations were quite opposed to my policies, by the way. They knew best. And they knew so best they crashed it. When I pulled out of the lineup, decided I'd write another book and so forth, she went for a little while and she splattered. Why did she splatter? Well, they didn't hat, they didn't train, they didn't insist on good training. And there she went. Quite in addition to that, she was also being run into, that whole area and myself were being run into by one of the lousier sets of bums that ever walked down the path. Our group had decided that this was very dangerous. It lay across a political plan of such magnitude that the world was very well saved from it, and it probably has been saved from it now. But those cats are still walking around in circles. It was a bending of the law by reason of a disease known as mental illness. If people had this strange disease called mental illness, why then jurisprudence, as normally practiced in sensible countries, would have to be laid aside. And the knock on the door of the middle of the night and the no legal procedure for the incarceration so that you could kill somebody was intended as the political future of the countries in which we were operating. And we ran square into that. And all of a sudden we came along and said, hey, you can make these guys well. You can handle them. Ha ha. Boo-hoo. And they said, oh, my God. And they pulled every gun they had. And by 1968, we had their backs almost snapped. As far as I'm concerned right now, crossing my fingers, it has snapped. We had exterior pressure. that was quite unusual. But it could start up again. Now, how would it ever be prevented? Well, they never influence the prosperity of an org if the org remains established. But an org that is hit, which is unstabilized, which is not stable, tends to go... Some bad news comes through the place. Something like this happens. Some rumors come around. A couple of PCs are picked up and executed or something. Christ! See? So people get kind of unstable there. They were unstable to begin with, to get unstable. If they keep on rolling it and so forth, it'll handle. So it all breaks down to personnel and the stability of that personnel. And that is the test. If you can achieve a flow of personnel, you can then get stable personnel. How odd. It doesn't mean that everybody is absolutely fixed upon his post. It means the speed with which you can hat somebody and get him producing, and which you can get him off of a sensitive post and get somebody on who can be hatted when he doesn't. That requires a flow. That requires personnel. You've got to have personnel to pick from. You've got to have personnel pools. You've got to have people in training. You got that, you got it made. That's a flow of personnel. Whenever you see an org suddenly static, you know you are looking at a future crash. How long has it been since anybody has been hired in this org? It's been 4 months. Oh boy, we're about 30 days from a crash. Because all that has to happen is Mamie Glutz's husband has all of a sudden got to, or something else untoward occurs, which knocks a couple of pins out of the lineup, and you've got nobody being seasoned coming up the line, so you start to run out of your experienced people. That was an interesting fact. The L.A. org, big stat days, had as executives people who are no longer around. They may be in franchises, or they're out someplace, or so on. Scientology orgs cut their own throats with their 2.5-year contract. At the end of about 2.5 years, the person thinks he ought to leave. Yeah, or at the end of 5 years, contract was up, so immediately he should leave. 2.5 years, takes about 2.5 years to make a staff member. A flow of personnel. How you build up a very strong organization. Static personnel you want. And that doesn't mean every time somebody stumbles while he's kicked in his head or something like that, you're not being an executioner personnel. But it does mean that if you are operating without a personnel pool, you will be in trouble consistently and continuously, and the problems which you have, you will find sooner or later, will become insurmountable. You just won't be able to get over them. You got a division, and that division is supposed to number anything from 3 to 40. And if you haven't got personnel pools in a little division, you may go longer than a big division, but if you haven't got personnel pools, at the end of about a week of staticness, you will now have a problem. It happens that fast. Take a tech division. The ebb and flow of tech personnel is fantastic. One of the things that knocks you in the head in a tech division is the CS. Because he's following the rules, and he should. And if he follows the rules, you'll eventually have a marvelous tech division. If he doesn't follow the rules, you won't. on any similar error, repeated, it's one instruction, one cram, one retread. All a guy's got to do is repeat the same error or a similar error, retread. Yeah, but my God, we've got 15 public and they are already backlogged and you all of a sudden have swept away three auditors. Well, you better have had swept away three auditors. Because the number of hours you will now run up patching the number of goofs those guys are making will exceed anything you ever dreamed of. By keeping an inexpert auditor on the line or an inexpert supervisor on the line, you have promptly backlogged your org. He's a backlog even before he touches a PC. Because if he audits 10 hours, it's going to have to be 5 to patch up his 10. If he's trained this group of students, somebody else is going to have to come along halfway through this course or something like that to get a product because they just aren't graduating. Do you see? So it's the personnel in that particular case that creates the situation with inexpertness. Now, we don't follow this out, but we'll shortly be following it out with supervisors. All he's got to do is miss on a student, and he gets a heavy instruction. And if he misses again on a student, he'll be crammed. And if he misses again, retread. And then you will see, all of a sudden, training pick up to the skies. Retread. If you fail to retread, now let me show you the Estos problem. If you do retread people, it means people are going to be missing out of your lineup. And you're going to go mad because you haven't got auditors to fill in. And he was halfway through Mrs. Glutz. And now all of a sudden the DOP has got to tell Mrs. Glutz that her auditor... But the funny part of it is she'd feel great confidence in the organization. If all of a sudden you said your auditor is being retreaded. And she would probably say, well, he seemed all right, but it wasn't quite as good as I thought it should be. So there you are, guy gone out of your lineup. Where do you get another one? How do you fill it in? Well, therefore, it requires an auditor pool, doesn't it? What org has an auditor pool?
None.
One of the ways you make an auditor pool, you can ebb and flow off upper-level training. Ebb and flow. See? Every time a guy hasn't got PCs, he's on full-time training, you could bring him up. You could actually work out some kind of a scheme. There isn't such a scheme operating, but you could make an auditor pool where the auditor would either be studying or auditing. One of those operations we started, to show you how these things backfire, we put a setup auditor on the Dianetic rundown. It was a spare 6, so as to keep the Dianetic auditors running. So we'd take this auditor, and we would run him. He would put in the roods and pat something up and give the person back to the Dianetic auditor when upper-level actions had to be done, just to get this person so he could go on through with his Dianetics. I look over, and we got a hideous-looking stat like this. Setup auditor, 30 hours and 35 minutes. Average Dianetic auditor, 9 hours. What's that mean? It means you didn't have enough setup auditors. It isn't the system is unworkable. It probably required 50% of the number of Dianetic auditors as setup auditors. Now, if you just increase that way up and had this guy studying for his upper-level rundowns or doing setups, if you worked out something like that, you would have such a thing as an auditor pool. You could fill them in. But on the other hand, what are you doing with auditors who can only audit Dianetics? That must have been an oversight in the amount of training required. It must have been a production demand that was there before the auditors were furnished. So you got problems like this. But they all center around this one thing of personnel. And that's why the product org system, it'll gun an org, it'll fix it up, it'll bring it forward, it'll do this and that, but boy, does it have to be backed up. And it's got to be backed up rapidly. So the ESTO's job is not a slow job, it's actually a rather fast job. I was interested right now in the one org where the ESTO system is running at this moment, that the deputy CO was found to have been third-partying the main ESTO and between the main ESTO and the commanding officer. She's obviously blaming things on the ESTO or something or something or something. And somebody had to go over to her from USLO to debug this and run a third-party investigation and get the thing unbugged. Now, that's interesting. They've run into it already. In other words, the ESTO was really not backing up with the speed that was required of the production. And it's true enough, I think at this stage of the game he hardly has any ESTOs working in the org. I think they're mostly under training. Going at it just a little bit wrong. An ESTO, you see, is supposed to hat somebody and get him producing what he should be producing on that post. It doesn't matter. First there's an instant hat and get him produced on the post, and then we mini-hat him and get him produced on the post, and then we full-hat him and get him produced on the post, another just a little sandwich. So it's only fair that an ESTO be trained the same way. Now, there is something about total study that is bad. The significance mass ratio unbalances. And you just get the significance, the significance, the significance, and after a while you say, oh my God, if I just had some mass to go with this significance, if I could just see one of these things. And so therefore, a person on the significance, significance, significance will actually try to learn, try to find out, try to find out, try to find out, sort of pull in, pull in. He goes to effect, 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 effect. And the very good student very often becomes a very glib student who then can't apply his data. And it comes just from the mass significance ratio. So therefore, it is vital that an ESTO not fall into this, because he has to be causative. He has to be a cause. And it is vital that he keep his study up and not skip it, because he has to be the damn bested hatted person that anybody ever heard of. Boy, does he have to be hatted. Otherwise, he won't think it's possible that anybody can be hatted. So, while others sleep, he ought to be cracking the book. Now, in addition to that, he also has to hat himself on the division he's handling. So he's carrying through two hats simultaneously. He's hatting himself on all the hats of the division, the divisional hat, and he's hatting himself on his ESTO hat, and so forth. And there is a lot to know. And therefore, he should be in the middle of it all with plenty of mass to overcome all that significance. So I think you find that's quite optimum. Now, there are a few little bits and pieces which I would like to call to your attention. One of the benefits of an ESTO system is that an SP, and they do exist, cannot work happily in a division with Ernesto. Why? Well, Ernesto's sort of missing the withhold on him all the time. And just the fact that the Ernesto is there operates as a curb on his activities. Why? Well, he starts caving in this one and caving in that one and caving in another one the way he was doing previously. It shows up on the Ernesto's lines. And Gertrude is crying, and Bessie Ann is sick, and George, all of a sudden, is howling 1-1 resentful. And the division wasn't quite that bad yesterday. And we started straightening it out, and we get it running somehow. It was the org officer who handled all the personnel, by the way, and that was far beyond the org officer's ability, calling on personnel all the time. That's Ernesto's job. And so here you are, calling on, trying to have them, trying to get them produced, trying to get them lined up, trying to make sure there's everything is okay. And you find out the place is upset. And you check it up for Deb T and so forth. You can't find any real signs of it and so on. And the next day, why, it's a little bit tougher. And a day or two goes along, and Ernesto, in any event, would then, about that time, get suspicious that there was something going on here. He didn't know what it was. And to save his own life, he would have to run it down. Now, that's why Ernesto has to know SP Tech. Not because he has got lots of SPs, but he will get one now and then. I just found out a guy, I'll give you a real practical, you know, I'm not giving you anything I haven't done. I can speak with considerable certainty on this subject. But I've been trying to had a guy and trying to had a guy and trying to had a guy and trying to had a guy. Somewhat in, some not intensively. I've been trying to had him and hadding him. And he unhats, and I had him, and he sort of unhats. And because I'm not concentrated on this point, it took me a little while, quite a little while, to become aware of the fact that something was wrong. Believe it or not, I might only spend 5 minutes a day on this subject, but there was somebody else spending 3 and 4 hours of post time a day busy hatting him as a chiropractor. The other person was going to leave, wanted to blow, and wanted to study chiropractor to handle his own spine. And is the kind of a guy that would never make a doctor anyway because he hates people. And I didn't wake up to this for quite a while until all of a sudden it started to hit me as rather strange that I couldn't hat this fellow. As a matter of fact, my little efforts to hat this fellow were starting to meet resentment. And it was increasing over a period of time, and yet there had been some ethics actions. So I could, of course, say, well, he was upset about these ethics actions. There were ways to explain. But I wasn't in there pitching with this fellow all the time, really trying, and yet it showed up. He had a fellow on the other side of him that was hatting him much harder. We had a whole organization one time that was being hatted as models. And the guy that was doing this eventually blew the organization up. It was Johannesburg. He kept talking to them about this was the way to earn some extra money. It was actually just peanuts, the extra money, don't you see? And they were all being hatted as models. It was most remarkable how the organization just went down further and further and further. There was nobody there hatting them as anything at all, except one guy hatting them as models. One franchise was being hatted to run the brassiere business. Oh, you know that one. All right. And they just never could seem to turn out a product, and their people were very unhappy, and their people had to go several hundred miles to another, to an org, to get their cases handled, but by that time they didn't have any money. It was a very weird situation. So an SP does various things, and one of the things he does is cross-hatting. And it's a phenomenon I hadn't actually analyzed until fairly recently and looked back over the numbers of times it has happened. Cross-hatting. You're trying to hat this person as one thing, and somebody has crossed your lines and is hatting him as something else. And I've begun to realize that that is one of the favorite tricks of an SP. You really don't want to be here. What you really want to be doing is waffle, 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 waffle. We used to have about three guys that used to meet up a long time ago. They're all long gone. In the radio shack. And they were being beautifully hatted on the glories of the WOG world. And they just kept getting hatted on the subject. The fellow who was doing the hatting was finally sent out as a course supervisor, and he laid probably the only wild egg and made the most complete mess of anybody I ever heard of with a course. He was suppressing from the word go, but that was what he did. He just went around and hatted everybody as something else. What you really want to be is, and what you really want to be doing as. You get it? You don't quite see it. Some guy, for instance, let's say you got a taxi driver, he's being hatted as a taxi driver, only he's got a fellow taxi driver that hats him as a writer all the time. What you really ought to do, Joe, is write up your experiences. I understand you once went college, and you should write up this and all the things which you know and all the things that had happened and so on. He just talks to him about it consistently. Or maybe he's got a wife, see? I hear, Joe, what you really ought to be is a bank president. And he hats him as a bank president all the time. His taxi business goes completely to pieces. They start going broke. The wheels fall off the taxi. He gets sacked. I've run into several very promising young men who have been cross-hatted. Not any inside our organizations, but outside our organizations. There was a young fellow who had a very brilliant ability to organize and promote. And he could organize something, and he could promote something, oh my God. And he was running a little chain of language schools in New York, and he was doing beautifully. And he was making more money than any young man of his age ever had any business making. So his wife and his mother hatted him consistently and continuously as a millionaire and spat on him because he wasn't. And he eventually gave up and quit and went broke totally. The $20,000 or $30,000 a year that he was making was not their idea of what he should be doing. Now, they never told him how or what he should be doing. So it was kind of a de-hatting. Whatever he was doing was no good because it wasn't making enough money. He ought to be making a million, making a million, making a million, making a million. What is he doing playing around with this over here? He's making a million, making a million. I knew a promoter one time. He finally died up. I even paid the expenses of his funeral. But all he ever did was hat himself with the wrong hat. He was a promoter, and he kept trying to hat himself as a millionaire. It was the most remarkable thing. So that he never really could promote anything because it didn't make enough money. So he never really could do anything because it didn't come up to his expectations of what hat he ought to be wearing. Get the idea? You see how this thing can go crosswise. So one of the things you want to look at very carefully is cross-hatting. how's this guy being had it? Now, it isn't that you are simply being jealous and want him to be had it as you want him to be had it. The truth of the matter is he's really not being had it. He's being sort of de-hatted and re-hatted and mishatted. And it's apparently some kind of an effort to get people to fail. You will find people who have been hatted as an artist when they were a very, very good bus driver. People who have been hatted as a bus driver when they would be a very good artist. Families are marvelous at this. In the 19th and 20th century, I'm sure that it has reached an all-time high. If little Willie wants to be woof, it's for sure the family want him to be waff. Or he couldn't possibly be woof. In other words, there's a lot of randomity that you'll run into on the subject of hats. It's mostly pulled off by suppressives. It's one of the tricks of the trade. Not just speak in generalities and how bad the boss is and so forth. You can stand up to some of that. But you won't have much luck cross-hatting because the guy gets mispurposed. Now, you're in the right to this degree. To this degree, you are in the right. A person who can't be hatted as what he is doing will never make it with any hat. One exception. A poll of recent blow-offs, dropouts. This is not current, this is several years ago. Of Harvard, Yale, and Princeton students demonstrated that the student action was the mishatting. And they promptly went out and did what they thought they ought to be doing in society and immediately shot up into the upper income brackets and were doing everything under God's green earth, directing movies and everything else. They were howling successes. So you can get a mishatting. It doesn't do you too much to try to cross up somebody's hats. If he's got a straining ability to be a this and you try to hat him as a that, well, something's going to happen. There's going to be a conflict. He isn't going to be able to do as well as he's doing. Now, there isn't any such thing, however, I hate to have to tell you, as native ability. There are things that certain guys are very good at, but that doesn't mean they can't be good at anything else. And it's the broadening of ability that brings one's own native ability, so-called, into full view. You'll find a fellow, for instance, who has a purpose to be a writer. They exist. I used to run into them, postmen. That was one of the things from the early days of writing that I really used to get. First I went sort of, and I'd ridge on this thing. But you know, I hardly ever met anybody who didn't want to be a writer. The postman, the garbage man, the doctor. I was in an area which was rather arty, Southern California. But it just seemed like everybody and his brother were thwarted writers. They all wanted to be writers, and they were being something else. One day a garage mechanic said to me, well, I always wanted to be a writer, and I just didn't have the college education. I almost laughed in his face. The one thing you don't want if you want to be a writer is a college education. God help you. But all of these fellows had somehow or other gotten sold a pup. They were very unhappy on their posts and on their jobs. They weren't happy with what they're doing, but the chances of their ever doing anything else was quite slight. It wasn't that they couldn't have been writers. It wasn't that this was a bad ambition. About the only thing wrong with being a writer at that particular time, there were 10,000 people in the United States who regularly wrote and got rejects. There were 600 of them who occasionally sold something, and there were 200 writing the entire fiction output of the United States. The room at the top was zero. Very, very poor. Very poor indeed. Around the Los Angeles area, you run into people who want to be actors. They want to be an actor, they want to be an actor, they want to be an actor. You run into this sort of thing. Well, what is this? This is some kind of a failed purpose. So if they're never going to... One of the sad things about it is a guy who once was a writer and who isn't now, but who still thinks he ought to be, only he doesn't. You've got a total failure sitting there. My whole point is these people lead very unhappy lives. So there's some difference between a guy who has an ambition to be something or other, which is fine, and something where a guy has some kind of an ambition he never will be, which gets in the road of your hatting him as anything. Post-purpose clearing, as I mentioned to you on an earlier tape, is about the quickest brush-off of a very broad subject you ever cared to see. Because it takes in hand purposes in life. And those purposes can go back to the ark. And the more failed purposes a guy has stacked up, the tireder he will be. What is tiredness? Tiredness, actually, factually, an auditor, a good CS and a good auditor can find them. It isn't that all auditors can find them. And it isn't all that they will do their listing and nulling rules correctly, so you're in rather dicey territory. But the fellow who has a tremendous ambition to be something or other, has got some fire to be it, and he's got some energy, and he's got some action, and he is driving forward toward being that thing. You will recognize this. If it has anything to do with any usefulness in the org, for God's sakes, foster it. But the guy who wants to be something else, which he never will be, and he couldn't be in the first place, and you're trying to hat, will just get kind of tired. This gets sort of exhausted. Because you're keying in his failed purposes. As I say, a CS and a good auditor can get at this thing. But tiredness is failed purpose. Don't think it's anything else. It isn't. That's just straight tech. But purpose also goes back to evil purpose, which is the cause of insanity, and that's caused by an RS. So the RSing personnel that you successfully had on a post will be counted on the hands of an armless wonder. Because they're driven by quite a different purpose. And until that is handled, one, they won't be happy. Two, they will be sick. And three, you won't be able to have them. So there are other ramifications to this. Now, this factor is handled, as far as you are concerned, with a fast flow of personnel. If you've got lots of personnel, then you will get enough personnel who can be hatted and who will take their posts, and you don't have to worry too much about the rest of this. But there is a tech that goes with it, and you should know that there is one. The cause of insanity is not a germ that causes mental illness in somebody's brain. That is not the cause of insanity. It is not the second dynamic. It is not because someone was interfered with as a little child. It is not because one is fixated on panties. Those are all completely wrong, and that is why psychiatry and the alienist and anybody else with him was a totally failed profession. They never were able to make anybody well. So that, of course, is the test. They made these guys, put these guys back out in the society full of tranquilizers so they can get back in again. But to make a person a well, happy human being out of a psycho who isn't then damaged by the treatment was completely beyond their capabilities. The secret that they were looking for is purpose. Insanity, pure, unadulterated insanity, is an evil purpose. Now, anybody's got some nasty purposes, but the person who is really insane really is riding that one, boy. And they're nutty as fruitcakes. And it doesn't matter how competent they are or how incompetent they are. The psychiatrist writing in the United Nations, what cheek, what a bunch of frauds. You know, if a guy can't do anything with a mind, you'd think, for Christ's sakes. Writing in the United Nations, they write a United Nations booklet out, and that whole United Nations booklet, I've forgotten which number it is devoted to the definition of insanity and the training of people to be psychiatrists by a semi-defunct organization, now no longer very prominent, called the World Federation of Mental Health. They seem to have dropped by the wayside. And they define it as incompetence. That's how the psychiatrist is defining it. And you know why he defines it that way? So he can get rid of the people in the society that he doesn't think are competent. So that if any guy is a little bit dumb or a little bit dull or a little bit half-witted or a little bit retarded or a little bit this or a little bit old or something like that, they can be driven down to the local crematorium and they don't have to worry about him anymore. Incompetence has nothing to do with insanity. And that you, as an establishment officer, must know. It has nothing to do with insanity. I know, by the way, what the exact mechanism of it is, and I'm not going to sit here and give you lectures on OT-30. I'm not trying to say, well, there's a bunch of things that you don't know. It's just not germane to your area because you're not auditing people. I'll tell you as much of it as you could find useful. Its best definition is, not definition, but the factor in it in which you're interested is unconsciousness. The competence of a person is in direct ratio to their degree of consciousness. And their awareness, I'm talking about the eyeball, of their environment. And competence is directly proportional to those two things. So don't expect a half-knocked-out druggie to be very competent. He won't be. Now, similarly, the insane are all degrees of competence. And there have been some of the most brilliant geniuses who are utterly, screamingly insane. And there have been some of the dumbest boobs that were utterly, screamingly insane. It has nothing to do with it. It's not on the same scale. We're dealing now with the scale of aberration as the scale of competence. The number of outpoints the guy is carrying around in his skull is how aberrated he is, and it has very little to do with his competence. I mean, it has very little to do with his sanity. Excuse me, it has everything to do with his competence. But from your point of view, the amount of consciousness the person has, how conscious he is, and his width of awareness. Can he see? Is what demonstrates his competence. Now, in the last couple of days, I've been cross-checking this just for your benefit, and I've been very, very sharply observing. And I found the stuckidity, anadynamic, leads to the damnedest oversight you ever cared to see in your life. It's hard to believe. I have put some things around. I have laid a few little tests. They just don't see them, even though they're closely associated with their, quote, post. So fixedness on a dynamic line also compares to some degree to purposes. But the width of what they can see is limited totally by their fixedness. You have the tools with which you can spread this out. So you can make a guy bright to the degree that you can wake him up and spread his awareness. And that is very well worthwhile knowing. There's a lot of tech there. You can actually look at some guy that is tending to fail. And you can see exactly, if you look at him and look at what he's doing, you can really see exactly what dynamic he's fixed on. It's quite amazing for your benefit, and so that I could tell you about it and so forth. I looked into it to see if there wasn't some simpler method of approaching the situation. Now, you could do an assessment, first dynamic, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth. You could actually do an assessment of some kind. You'd get a read. It's open to auditing. It's open to rather simple auditing. It means that the guy has shut down on all other areas than this one. So that's how unconsciousness goes along with it. But actual unconsciousness, we're talking about unconsciousness, meaning just in consciousness. You hit a guy in the head and he's unconscious. Not Freudian. You know, you hit him in the head, he goes out. Well, to what degree is he free of that? Well, he may only have it left on one fixed dynamic area, and he may be unconscious on all the rest of them. And as you try to shift his attention off this, you get misunderstood word phenomena, and all kinds of weird things will start coming off because he's never noticed some words in that area. And various other weird things happen. Now, you want to account for boil-off and that sort of thing. This is it. He's been knocked out, knocked in the head, on every other dynamic than the one he is operating on. So he is a shutdown to a limited operation. A person who can't type would then, by TR0 on a typewriter, and reach and withdraw from a typewriter, and hello and okay to the typewriter, something like this, would actually wake up on the subject of a typewriter. Do you follow? You could probably take a ship captain and make him go out and confront the ship and run reach and withdraw from the ship, and he would go through some odd little boil-offs and weird things. And some strange ideas, and he would have some cognitions. which means really recognitions, you got it? And all of a sudden, he would come awake on that subject. Now, you also, with region withdrawal, supposing you start to throw in the upper levels of TRs just as simple as hello and okay right here in PT for the ship, you know, make the ship say hello to you, and you say okay to that, and you say hello to the ship, and the ship says okay to you, so forth, you would find out that he'd brighten up considerably. Now, that is a great oddity. But unless you know the mechanism, it will look very strange. Competence on any given subject is what a person is not unconscious on. We merely mean knocked in the head on. And those things he can't see, he is unconscious on. And that determines his competence. Now, the thing that gets in the road of this is crossed purposes or crossed hatting. Somebody that's crossing his hatting is also crossing purposes. Do you see? And then he can also be a type who RS's and is quite mad, and then all hell will break loose. So what have you got here? If you can just visualize what I'm talking about, just visualize dynamics 1 to 8, recognize the person is stuck absolutely and totally, let's say some wild socialist, and he's stuck absolutely and totally on the fourth dynamic. Nation doesn't mean anything, family doesn't mean anything, he doesn't mean anything, nothing is followed, he's got to get out there, and when comes the revolution, why everybody's going to eat strawberries, you know. And he's totally stuck on this, you see. You'll find out he walks into trucks and buses and wears thick glasses and so on. Now, part of it is overts. He's got overts on these other dynamics to a point where he shut them down. That tends to wake him up if you really want to get fancy with your tech. You could assess it like, do you have any overts in the first dynamic? Do you have any overts in the second dynamic? And so on, and one would fall out, and you'd be able to get that one and clean that one up. We're talking about the technical side of this picture. But you've got a PT. You've got a PT. I told you your business is here and now. What is? And you've got PT processes to wake him right up in PT. A most remarkable thing, and you won't believe this is as remarkable as this is. By running reach and withdraw from airplanes on an aircraft squadron, a flight surgeon trained in Scientology, and not very well trained, kept a whole aircraft squadron at Anacostia for a whole year without a single accident. They didn't even tick a wing to a wing. Now, for that happening in an aircraft squadron in the United States Army, Air Forces, it's the Air Forces now, it's the United States Air Forces, is unheard of. Those guys make secondhand hardware out of more equipment than you can shake a stick at. So the U.S. Air Forces, now let me sort this out and give you an exact correct action. It was a naval aircraft squadron at Anacostia. Yes. And he was a Navy flight surgeon. Give you the exact case history. And the time of this is many, many years ago, about 1958. And that's all he did, because that was all he knew how to do. That was all the tech he knew. He just ran reach and withdraw from airplanes and all the parts of the airplanes. And, of course, he woke those pilots up on the subject of those aircraft to a point where they were totally aware. They could control the things. They were caused over those aircraft. That was all. So you see, it's really not very difficult. I give you the two bugs. The bug is purpose line. He's got some kind of a wild purpose sitting over here on one side, or he's got a completely insane purpose to destroy everything in sight. All these insane purposes are destructive. Now, you then have it in your hands to be able to raise the competence of an individual. And this brings us into the fact that you should follow this procedure, and this is standard operating procedure for a division. Hat them like mad as specialists. Hat them as specialists. Hat them as specialists. Get them all hatted as specialists. And then hat them with everybody else's hat in that division. Why? Breadth of awareness. If you want an org to fall apart, just hat everybody in that org as a specialist only. And don't hat him as anything else. And you will have an org that will individuate. It won't operate as a team. It will generate dev T because nobody understands what anybody else is doing. They become unconscious of the remainder of the org to all intents and purposes. So this is your standard operating procedure. Is hat as a specialist and then generalize the hatting. Hat him as a specialist, then hat him as the other hats in the division. Now, if you really want to go for broke, hat him with the rest of the hats in the org. The way you do that is an OEC, org exec course. You will fail absolutely and dismally and forever and aye if you only specialist hat. You will find that in the tech division, then, that a supervisor who was never trained as an auditor, who was never hatted as a DP, who doesn't know anything about it all about CSing, will not be progressing, and you won't find your tech division going up the line. This is real straight, because sooner or later, somebody in establishment officers is going to say, but I've hatted everybody in the division, and it just doesn't seem to operate. Well, he's gone up to the point of hatting everybody in the division as specialists. They're specialized hats, the specialty of that post. They're just specialists. He's specialized, and he's actually now gone to a point where he's narrowed their vision. Now, by generalized hatting, you start to widen the vision. This is of vast importance, whether you believe it or not, because I've traced the failures of two or three orgs to just this point. Understand the failures of orgs to this point. The whole org failed. Had to be picked up and put back together again with sticky plaster. And yet there was a lot of hatting going on. They got to a point where they wouldn't even talk to each other as they were passing in the halls. They just were not aware of each other's jobs. They just fell apart. So, hatting, standard operating procedure, hat as individuals, by all means. And then hat as the department, then hat as the division, and go for broken hat as the org. And if you don't follow that procedure, you'll never achieve a crack org or a crack division either. It gets limited. In other words, it stunts its growth. Now, if you skip the gradient and you try to hat them as the whole org and never hat them as an individual, you will also produce a chaos. So the guy's got to be hatted as something. And then you span it out. And you will get greater and greater competence as a staff member. Just as nice and neat as that. Same thing. You span his attention. Now, an executive will be the person that you have the hardest trouble hatting, and I could probably give you a long, long lecture on the subject of hatting executives. because you will be most loath to approach them, and they can have the most effect on the org. And the main thing wrong with an executive is that he doesn't know how to play the piano with the divisions, so he issues cross orders. He issues orders which cross policy. He tells wrong posts to do wrong things. And the next thing you know, he's got the staff all tangled up. So you put it together, and the untrained executive scrambles it all up for you. The letter registrar is all of a sudden doing promotion, and the registrar is running CF, and it's quite remarkable. They have to know how to play the piano. So of all people, they have to know posts and people. Of all people, they have to know the posts and the people. They start issuing orders into a division, it'll cross that division up. And it's one of the primary maladies. Another thing is, and you just had him with all the hats of the division, that's the qualifications of an executive. Make him hold some of those posts for a while. And the other one is, and this you won't believe and they won't believe and so forth, but this doesn't make it untrue. This is absolutely true. An executive should know how to run better than anybody else every machine that he has in his whole department or division. He should know every one of those machines, and he should know how to run them, and he should have been checked out on them. And that's a big order. That's a big order. You take an organization that's got have $100,000 worth of equipment in it and all kinds of little various typewriters and duplicators and Xeroxes. And he should not only know how to run them, he should know how to maintain them. Not necessarily repair them, but maintain them. Know what maintenance they're supposed to receive. And if he's real hot, he knows how to repair them. That sounds incredible. What's this fellow doing up in this great big plush office and so forth, knowing how to run? Oh, we leave that to the staff, the mechanics. We've got a fine engine room on this ship. We've got a very fine engine room on this ship. And that, in no small part, is in due to the very fine engineers we have on this ship. But it's also due in no small part that I know engines. Most of the basic tech they run on, I wrote up for them. Now, I didn't when I came aboard this ship because it had such an antagonistic bum of an engineer. He was a WOG engineer. I didn't go down and check myself out on each one of those pieces of machinery. And I should have. Usually takes about 3 days or something like that, of floundering around and doing so. Over a longer period of time, after that guy got out of the road, we managed to make something out of the engine room. Why, it was my glancing at it here and then, inspecting this and that here and there, and so on. And our guys were good enough to pick up the ball in spite of this. Now, the only reason this could happen, I've been well-trained as a diesel engineer. People say, but me as a diesel engineer, what's that? Well, I've never been an engineering officer. I've been spoiled with bosuns. Over the centuries and ages, I have had some of the finest bosuns that anybody has ever heard of, and that included World War II and recruited later ships. Very fine bosuns. And made a complete bum out of me. I know all the techniques of a deck sailor and so forth, but cargo handling and the things that a bosun does particularly, I'm weak on. You don't find the cargo handling gear of this ship in very good shape. There's a coordination. In other words, I've been made a bum out of on the subject of cargo handling gear and so on. Sails all open and shut with cards and spades and all that sort of thing. But derricks and slings and I can talk the patter. I've read it in books and so on. But there is not that intimacy and so on. Whereas I have rolled up my sleeves and repaired engines in the roaring sea and busted down one time rolling 40 degrees and so forth. I had a camshaft out of a 2,500 horsepower diesel and so forth. And back in and fixed up. Matter of about an hour after I don't know how many engineers quit. Why? It's just part of the organization. And an executive can be lied to. And he'll burn up all sorts of ridges and unknownnesses and so forth. He can be lied to. People tell him, well, the machine down here, it only turns out 20 stencils a minute, 20 runs a minute. Requires two operators to run the thing. And executive says, to hell with you. To hell with that. Quit kidding around. Turn the machine on. Now, I had this interchange one time right here on this ship, you know. What the hell is going on? Why can't you turn out mimeos? Why? What do they look so funny for and so on? What's going on? Well, it's the machine, it's this and that and the other thing. And the power is off and it doesn't get to it. And we haven't repaired its electric motor. I said, there's something wrong with the electric motor, the mimeograph machine. You won't believe this. It had a switch on the back of it, down low under the combing, which was the on-off switch, and they'd never found it. So they were cranking all their mimeographs out by hand. It happened again. Didn't happen just once. It happened again. Many months passed by. I just told somebody to run down there and throw that switch on the bottom of the machine. It promptly started running. Everybody was horrified. Now, the machine, the addressograph company, turns out a fake addressograph machine. It can be set up to run. It takes a little bit too long to set it up. The Bradma is a better addressing machine in any case. But that addressograph, in spite of its horrible name, doesn't really address, and I find all staves, wherever they have one, hand-feeding them. They might as well have rubber stamps. Silk screens are better than those things, and so on. The Bradma is a metal plate machine, and it's a fine machine, and it's beautifully tabbed, and you can do all kinds of things with it. It finally found what the trouble is with an addressograph. A lot of whys. It scares a staff to death. When those envelopes start running through that machine, they run through at such a fantastic speed that you can hardly see the envelopes. They're just a blur. And I don't know how many the thing feeds, maybe 10,000 an hour or 20,000 or something, but there's this huge chute, and they go off with such a horrible clatter and bang and crash, and they're so noisy, and they look so dynamite-y and dangerous, and these plate boxes and so on are just pouring into this machine, and you yank that tray out and shove another tray in, and wham, wham, God. It scares them to death. It is simply too much machine for them, and it takes too long to set up. That was an expensive lesson. We immediately started junking all of our addressographs when I really found the why. I could run an addressograph, but nobody else could. So there's a limitation. Speed. Crash. Bang. But I hadn't actually been trained as an operator, and actually to train an operator, and I'd never bothered to try to train an operator on the machine, and that's what you couldn't do. Now, there's really one for the book, but it scared him to death. It looked like Niagara Falls had suddenly taken place in the addressograph room, all in full motion, full horsepower, and they weren't about to take that machine. You couldn't slow it down. There wasn't any gradient of it. You got it? Machinery. So you wonder, what in the name of God is going on? This is a machine age. And you wonder, what in the name of God is going on that nobody can ever get out of the address place, and why can't anybody do this, and why can't anybody do that? And he's, well, why don't you tab these things? Why don't you tab these things? The machine can't be tabbed. So therefore, an entirely different system has to be ordered, which is for every category, you type up a plate for that category, and that's a very cumbersome system because you can't change addresses easily. So he wonders why a dresser graph gets so balled up. It's because the executive who is in charge of the whole organization does not know how to run one. Simple. Also, quality. If he knows the quality that can come out of one of those machines, that he himself can get out of one of those machines, you get very fine promotion from them. I guess that goes for you then, huh? I guess where you've got machines under you, you'd better learn them well enough to train people on them. And then you say, well, I don't want to really be transferred from SEM over to HCO because they have an entirely different set of machines. No, loosen up your skull on it. Learn the HCO machines. But it's part of the scene. It's something that is established. It's something you have to pay attention to. If you don't know anything about cars, you'll find out that you just lose your staff cars one right after the other. You never saw such a casualty in cars. It's something mystic about it. If you, who have the responsibility for the general area which operates cars, know cars, you will catch all of the false reports, the nonsenses, and the carelessnesses, and you will be able to identify personnel. If you don't know anything about them, you won't catch any of these personnel factors. The guy's doing his job or he isn't doing his job. Well, you won't know. You can be kidded. One of the things that used to happen on this ship is they used to get an expert around, and he'd tell everybody, well, I'm an expert on this, and you can't learn anything about it. We haven't had it for quite a while because I've stepped on it a few hundred times, and it doesn't seem to have raised its ugly head. But it had some people completely backed off, and there were more things busted. There was stuff lying around broken, inoperational, and so forth, because people had been backed off by being told only an expert can have something to do with this. In other words, people could be kidded about it. False reports pile up on the subject of machinery. Production, oh, well, we can't get out that many envelopes. What do you mean, the rating of that machine is so-and-so? Well, maybe the rating of the machine is so-and-so in the literature. Let's get this two ways. But it isn't in the rating of it as it sits down there on the floor. The fact is, the machine, even though the people on it are grooved in and are trained to operate the thing, just isn't capable of that kind of an output. I'll tell you one that completely messed up lines, a Xerox at USLO, and somebody, by economy, bought a little tiny Xerox that could get out about 30,000 copies a month, was its maximum limit, it said there. They bought a toy. It used to run from 1 to 3 days without breaking down, even in the hands of experts. And the reason for it was running 44,000 copies. It was running way above its capacity. It was overstrained like mad. It should never have been there. One of the most expensive pieces of junk you ever heard of. I think it cost some huge sum of money, like $129 to service it, and it would have had to have been serviced every week to have kept it in function, because it had to be serviced with just so many copies. But USLO was trying to put that many copies through this Xerox machine in a week that the thing was trying to take in a month. And what did this do? It cut the data line to flag. Because they're pouring it all through this Xerox machine. So therefore, flag couldn't be informed as to what was going on because everything had to be Xerox. So it was all backloaded, but the Xerox machine was busted. And they must have had staff in that area in tears half the time. Just doing their nuts. People screaming at them, now look, get that Xerox up and get it off the flag. Flag sending in telexes, where's our information? The executive in charge of the organization did not go down and take one look at that Xerox, look at its book, look at the count that went through the thing, and say, we'll do two things. We will buy a Xerox and comment the guy who bought this one. It was a toy made out of cheap tin. What the hell went on? Do you see how lines can get jammed up? If you have any dependency on machinery and you don't know anything about the machinery, it becomes an area of unawareness. And every area of unawareness becomes an area of terrific error. The Prad.org system failed because there were not enough people around making people aware enough of what was going on to be able to get the production with great reality. The data which I've been giving you in this talk is all data that was relatively unknown in this system and was not given sufficient weight. Nobody told a product officer, you got to know all the machinery in the organization. That's an establishment function, isn't it? So you had to have an establishment officer to have him, didn't you? Since we've been chasing FEBCs through the engine room to get the idea of what lines are, that's the excuse we give them. You know, the old line terminal thing, the DC lectures, so that some people are unaware of lines and some people are unaware of terminals. Well, I found out that that existed in some of these students. So we just started chasing them down there because that was the only place in the ship we had lines that started somewhere and ran somewhere and stopped. They go down there and they see all this machinery and that sort of thing, and their awareness comes up, and some of them flinch and some of them do that. But I get more darn DRs about, golly, I went through the engine room today and we traced all the lines, and they're just as uptone as hell about it. Somebody spanned their attention. The engineers, of course, all PR. The engineers all PR them down there and tell them how good the engineers is. So they all write me. But that's a very successful action. Sounds like a strange hatting action to take an individual and start hatting him on a ship engines that he isn't even going to be aboard a ship. He's going to be out in some org someplace. But it spans their attention, shows them what a line is, shows them what flow is, makes things real to them. Some of these people didn't know that things started someplace, went through something, and arrived someplace else. And that was what we were curing. All right. Now, I've given you an extraordinarily long talk here on the subject. But I wanted you to see more about personnel. I wanted you to see more about the product org system. And there isn't anything dropped, really, from the viewpoint of the product officer. The org officer loses a few functions, such as personnel. You've got them. But he's got programs. So the modern system we're operating on is product, program, establish. There's the product officer, the program officer, and the establishment officer. Mind, body, product, and so forth. Well, we find out that this will evolve into a triangular system, and sometime we will have an ED or a CO in a large organization who will simply be a coordinating officer, and there will be an additional product officer who will have a deputy who is the program officer, and then you will have a person of equal rank, an executive establishment officer who's in charge of the establishment officers. Do you see that? Right now, we have to run it short it up. We don't have that much command personnel. So the CO is the product officer. His deputy is the program officer. He gets the programs done. He doesn't write the program. That the CO does that. And the establishment officer is the person who keeps it established and make sure that it produces and the programs come out straight and that those targets and quotas are met. That is the way the system goes. Now, I want to tell you one more thing about this. One more thing before I end this lecture. Just one little thing. You're going to beat your gums and yap and talk and howl and scream at somebody to get producing and producing, and why didn't he produce? And then one day you may walk into the product officer conference and you may find out that nobody there knows the definition of the word product. So everything you're doing could completely break down. So part of your hatting officer functions or definitely get these things damn well defined. And then those hats will spring apart. You'll be able to hold the form of the org, and something will happen. Because if a person has a misunderstood word about product in a division, he is not likely to ever be able to get a product out. And you will find in the long run, although I can give you very, very high school upstairs technology, you will find out in the long run that when you start applying it, the outnesses will be so basic, so simple, that your jaw will be dropped. It's like we take up the product conference, and they've been sitting there looking very, very blank, and we talk at them about the targets, and we talk at them, and we talk, and we talk, and they sit there and look blank, and then the penny drops. They don't know the definition of the word product. You don't think that's possible. Yes, it was possible. It just happened. Definition of the word product was one some little tiny cycle of action. That was a product. And then ghastly. So everybody's working like mad to get something done, but nothing. Nothing happened at the other end. Stats went down, all went to pieces. What was the why? The definition of the word product. What is a product? And just so as not to leave you in thin air, a product is a finished high-quality service or article in the hands of the being or group it serves as an exchange for a valuable. That's a product. Well, that's a hell of a definition, isn't it? It's a finished, high-quality service or article. Could be shortened up, in the hands of the consumer. As an exchange for a valuable. In other words, it isn't a product at all unless it's exchanged. Unless it's exchangeable, it's not a product at all. So a staff member says, well, I'm here getting out my product, getting out my product. And you say, well, where is it? Right here, right here, right here. Whose hands is it in? Hands. Because even the individual staff member has to put his service or article in the hands of some other staff member before it can be called a product. Even if you bring it down that low, much less the valuable final products of the organization. So the products of a division have to be in the hands of some other division before they're actually an internal product. And what are they exchanged for? Well, inside the organization, they're exchanged for support, they're exchanged for this, that, and they're also exchanged for the products of another division. But this thing that we're talking about, when we're talking about the valuable final products of a division, means they're out of the org, and they're out there into that other group called the public. And the public has put a valuable back for them, and then they're a product. That is it. Now, if you understand a product from the basis of the PL, which is called Exchange, one of the executive series, all of a sudden it makes sense, stats go up, everybody gets prosperous, affluent, and everything else. The guy sitting there doing this little tiny cycle of action, I've signed 18 routing forms today, that's my stat. Well, qu'il est du beau. Maybe so, we do not know. Your story sounds so queer. You'll find that staff members from whom a product is demanded, which is not their hat, will get very unhappy. And staff members who do not have a product will also get very unhappy. But it has to be an exchangeable product. So the word exchange is intimately associated with the word product. And the whole economics, whether you're talking about money or not, is just as much the word product as the word product itself. Exchange. Product is exchange. Exchange is product. So, after you've established everything, let's just make sure that the product officer knows the definition of product as part of your hatting actions. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.